Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on 9-3, the day they reopened the Bay Bridge to San Francisco.
Really? What was it closed for? Repairs?
No, they built a new span for $6 billion. It improves nothing. There's no more lanes. They could have built it all the way across the water, but they didn't do that. It's a complete scam.
Is that the one that was built by China that they had to send back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing.
It continues. The whole mess continues right under our noses, but it is what it is. Listen, I saw it tonight. That there's an article that talks about the cost of flood insurance. And what's going to happen is that because of Sandy, there was a need to increase the FEMA allowance. And through the flood insurance program, particularly in some areas that are low-lying, like Florida, they're going to be increasing the flood insurance costs. And some people may be paying upwards of $20,000 a year. I don't know who they are. But I understand that, you know, our policies...
Well, if you're in a floodplain...
Yeah, but it's because of Sandy why this is all going up.
Oh, yeah. Well, they said somebody's got to pay the bills.
Right. So, you know, you go the same way as always, you know. But it is what it is. I mean, if you live in certain areas, you got to pay larger amounts for, I guess, hurricane insurance or whatever it is. So, anyway, let me bring you up to date. The first week of the DH Unplugged Closest to the Pin contest is now closed. IBM is now locked for new entries. And we'll know the results 1 week out. We had a pretty good turnout. We have lots of people. And as a matter of fact, we'll go through it in a little while. But if you go to the DH Unplugged site, and there's a little link on top there. It says the close to the pin. There's like a bunch of stats there, what my number is for IBM, what John's number is for IBM, what the average is. And I was thinking when I saw the average number, I was saying, hey, you know what? It would be kind of interesting if as a group we hit it pretty well off. You know what I'm saying? If we're on average, when we look at that number – we see that, hey, that really was the closest, you know, in general. We'll see if the theory of working as a group together with our very, very intelligent audience is...
Yeah, will definitely be worth tracking.
Mm-hmm. So we got that going on. And next week actually starts Apple. Now,
somebody
this week we'll
put,
give it away.
We got to fix some of the stat working here.
What do you got?
Well, you got, I'm looking at this thing, IBM, your various entries. The high entry, $199. The low entry, $33.
Yeah. Well, that was after the $47 one that was out-entered. I don't know if that's a mistake or what that is, but
they should be hand-culled.
To take out the ones that are maybe the lowest and the highest or something? Or that's
well,
what
I think the high one is probably within range. I mean, you have to take a look at the median and then figure out, you know, if somebody's just completely out of control. But $33 shouldn't even be in there because it doesn't make – like it ruins the average. The average makes no sense.
Do you think they're trying to play it like the Price is Right?
I don't know what they're doing, but it's ludicrous. Now, of course, the joke would be on us if the company declared bankruptcy. This is not happening. It's not going to $33.
Maybe there's a 5-for-1 split.
In 1 week.
Maybe they know something we don't know. We'll fix that. You know, this is the first week. We're getting
I think the 33 is a reference to the No Agenda show.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, we have a 33 is our magic number.
Was 47 anything? Because I saw that too.
No, 47 is nothing. 42 nothing. Kind of is, but 47.
I'd have pulled them both. All right, we'll work on that. And next week is Apple, which I think is great timing, and we didn't plan this really. But Apple is having their big announcement on September 10th. So during the week, we're going to have a lot of gyrations as we find out.
That's going to be a tough one. That's going to be tough to call.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're going to bring out their iPhone and the gold iPhone, and which everybody wants.
Everybody?
Yeah. Really? If you start asking around, it turns out everybody wants this gold iPhone.
What you mean just like a gold plasticky thing?
No, apparently it's a very elegant gold color something. I don't know what it but
I would have to put that in my man purse.
Everybody wants one. I don't know. All I'm telling is that everybody's jazzed about it.
Mm. Well, we're going to have that for next week, and we're going to have this week, we're going to have the winner gets a autographed book, woohoo, of my book, The Disciplined Investor. And next week, I think we're doing a $25 gift card to somewhere. I'm not sure if we decided where it is. Do we decide?
No. No, we haven't decided anything.
Well, I'll figure
we're
it out.
We're kind of winging it here at the beginning. We'll figure it out how to do this right.
It's doing great, though. Really, we got a good number of people that have put in their numbers, and it's going along very well. So anyway, get over to DH Unplugged and put in your entry for IBM. IBM's dead, and for Apple coming up, make sure to hit that, and we'll try to remind everybody as well as often as possible. And you can follow us on Twitter and do all that stuff. All right, now that we get most of that out of the way, one more thing. We have a webinar series over at Trigger Charts. Now, all the different charts that I've been showing you with the different lines and colors and all that good stuff with the algorithms, John, well, they're now available on TradeStation. So we're going to have this whole webinar series. We'll put a link on DH Unplugged. Go over to TriggerCharts.com. Go over to the Disciplined Investor, wherever you want. Starting this week, for the next about 5 weeks, we're having a whole webinar series. All right, out of the way. Now, this week, unemployment data. What do you think?
Let's see. Everyone's looking for 180K. I think it's going to be a disappointment.
You know, it's interesting because
which
the manufacturing
means it'll be below 150.
Below 150. So what about the unemployment rate? Maybe about the same?
Yeah, that stays pretty stable.
I can't even follow that damn thing anymore. You know, it doesn't – honestly, it because of the way that it is calculated, it has lost its meaning. But much of the economic data has lost its meaning.
I haven't taken a look at the shadow stats for a while.
That's a good point.
Let's see what he's got going on. Because, you know, it deconverged when Obama first got in. And his shadow stats were going one way, and the official numbers were going the other.
Well, the U3 official versus shadow stat alternatives. We have the official U3 is, what do we say? What's the U3 here? U6. U6 is at 14%. They're saying 23%. And ShadowStats says about, let's see, the official. I don't know what that means, actually. I'm looking alternate.
Where's the regular chart, chart?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Well, it's under the alternative data unemployment, but
this is what's going on. Ever since about, looks like 2010, the things were all in parallel. Which is always fascinating me because, I mean, he's just got higher numbers, and the U6 and the U3 they're in parallel, and his numbers were in parallel. And then around 2000, it looks like around 2010 or late 2009, his numbers kept going up, and the official numbers started going down. And this is what's got me because his numbers are almost 25%.
Because, well, what he's done is he's actually done and calculated a seasonally adjusted number, but also utilizing – this whole thing that they've been doing, which is – and this is nothing new per se, but since you've seen this whole thing play out with the recent unemployment rate spiking and you have discouraged workers and you have obviously a very extended period of time where you can get unemployment insurance and then additional insurance and extensions and all that. Well, people are not going back to work, so you take them out of the workforce. So the official numbers look a lot better. But what happens is when you really put the numbers down on what the real – you know, hardcore unemployment rate is, that's what his numbers are.
Right. Right. These are the numbers that were used in the 1930s.
Correct.
And we should be comparing, you know, this is like baseball. It's like you can't start changing the way you score an error. You can't change the way you calculate batting average. You can't change it to on-base percentage. Just call it batting average. I mean, that's essentially what we've done here.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, these batting averages have gone way up. No, they haven't.
Right. No, you're exactly right. I mean, the fact is that's why some of this information is very difficult to absorb. And then the other thing that's really kind of interesting is the very strange and divergent revisions that have come out. You know, you've had this situation where we just saw a 2.5% print on GDP that was up substantially. Last quarter, we saw this, it was about, I think, 1.7, and then it went to like a 1.5 or 2, and then it went like below 1 or 1% for the quarter. This really big drop in GDP and through the revision process. And it seems a little bit, I don't want to say suspect, but just really bad reporting and bad number crunching to have these kind of revisions on a constant basis, because then you don't know what the numbers are moving forward. It kind of affects everything all over the place. So I don't know if it's something that's purposely done, which I can't imagine.
What do you mean you can't imagine? You're the one that keeps pointing out how they readjust the numbers month after month. Once they get the good number out, then they readjust it. Nobody pays attention to the readjustment.
Well, let me explain something to you. If I say I can't imagine it and I tell you what it is, really what I'm saying is that, you know, I don't want to be the guy that's bringing all this bad news. Let it percolate in your own mind that there's some kind of conspiracy going on.
Well, it's just a scam.
Yeah. Well, something's wrong.
Something is wrong. And this guy's Shadow Government Statistics. People should check it out. ShadowStats.com. And follow it, because you get to see stuff that you go, wait a minute, this is not what they're telling us.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely. They have a lot of nice things you can do without a subscription, too, where you can see things in Excel that they don't publish on from BLS, things that are just out there that you can take a look at. And there's a whole bunch of charts, a library from employment and payrolls and retail sales. And he, again, breaks down some of this looking at more of an average, a running total, and kind of really what's going on. So interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff. All right, so let's take a look at there's some other things that were really, I thought, quite fascinating. We have this coming up. We saw that manufacturing, this I thought was interesting too, manufacturing in China and Europe picked up. We saw that over the weekend that there was a pickup in China's manufacturing numbers, a couple of different gauges. They went over the 50 level, which is the demarcation point for expansion versus contraction. I thought that was kind of interesting that we're seeing a pickup. And we saw another pickup here in the U.S. We saw the ISM number come out this morning, and it was a 55, which was a pickup. And it's kind of against some of the grain of how we've seen that there is this decision to pull back on some of the situation with the Fed. And we've seen some of the other areas cooling. And all of a sudden, it picked up into the summer, which I thought was odd. But again, it's possible. And Europe also picked up pretty well, one of the highest numbers we saw in some time. So the markets really rallied on that information over the weekend into the opening of our markets on Tuesday morning. And then that whole Syria thing came up again.
Yeah.
You know, this weekend, Friday, President Obama pushed off the decision to do anything to Congress, right? We saw that happen.
Yeah.
Which is like a no-win for anybody, right? You know, the Republicans are doomed no matter what they do on this, because if they vote for going in, if, you know, the President Obama believes we should be going in, Democrats vote to go in and the Republicans vote to go in. Well, the Republicans are the guys that, you know, spilled it over and gave the positive push. Therefore, they're responsible for us going to war. If they don't and more people are killed over there, well, they're responsible for all these deaths. So I don't know what you think about this, but now we're hearing, the catchphrases. You're gonna hear all about this, right? You're gonna hear we're not gonna have boots on the ground. You know, all these.
They said that things. They've said that a million times on everything.
Right.
They were gonna be throwing roses at us when we went into Iraq.
Right. Exactly. And then we're gonna see. You're gonna hear the next one. You're gonna start hearing is it's gonna be a surgical strike. They're gonna use the word drones. They're gonna use the word short and very. Not protracted.
When Libya began, Obama says this will be a matter of days, not weeks.
Days. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a matter of days. It was a matter of months.
Mm-hmm. You can never really – I mean, I don't know what they're thinking is when they're talking about going in, stopping all the things that are going on, and not looking for a regime change. Now, how the heck do you stop what's going on if you don't have a regime change? I don't understand. So what are you going to do? You're going to go in and just bomb a bunch of places. There'll be collateral damage. There'll be some civilians killed and wounded. And what good is that going to do? Is that going to be like a big warning? Is that going to be like a punch in the arm that, hey, I got some power here, and if you do anything more, we're going to come in? I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just bad. It's a bad scene, let's face it.
Yeah, there's no win for any of us. Now, what was great was the UK outsmarted us. They came in, and before there was any decision by the U.S., on Friday, they voted that they would wait to hear from the UN. So then that just pushed it all off on the U.S.
Yeah, no, we got suckered on this deal.
Yeah, we got suckered badly.
There's
2 million refugees now. There's 110,000 dead at least. The one that is really kind of, I don't know if it's impressive or what it is, but man, Kerry is all over this, right? John Kerry?
The guy's like a drunken driver. He's all over the road.
Well, I mean, he seems, you know.
For one thing, here's the problem I have with him. I didn't have much of a problem. I figured he wasn't going to be that bad. But then he starts looking at YouTube videos and believing them all to be real. I mean, he's so naive. I mean, I think a lot of these guys do that. You know, they phony up some videos, and there's been good examples of this. They phony up some videos and have a bunch of people screaming in the background and fire some gunshots, and then they claim they're in the middle of some action, and then they post it with no attribution. There's no reporters. There's nobody there that can confirm any of this stuff's realistic or real, I mean. It's realistic. Mm-hmm. And then they post it, and then John Kerry watches, oh, my God, they're killing each other. This is terrible. I mean, he's essentially one of those guys who gets sucked into constant hoaxes on the Internet.
This is the kind of guy that we should try to do some kind of a Nigerian money laundering scheme.
Yeah, I'm sure he's like one of those guys who'd buy, oh, there's some guy, he's trying to get his money out of Nigeria. Let me help him out. Because I can get, like, I'll get $32 million out of this deal. You know, this kind of thing. I mean, it's...
I mean, if he's that
dumb. That's the way I see it.
If he's that naive and if he's that gullible, why isn't somebody putting a clamp on this guy?
Well, because I think he's serving the purpose of the regime. I honestly believe that what he's doing is, you know, he's going to pump up the idea of bombing them because he believes a bunch of YouTube videos that, you know, could be totally fake, some of them with old B-roll from God knows where. And he's singing the praises of the administration at the same time. This guy's perfect. Why would they want to get rid of him?
So basically, they got their hands on the extra tape from Black Hawk Down.
The B-roll. You know the stuff that was left on the cutting room floor is now showing up on YouTube.
Yeah, and it's saying it's current times, and it looks like the place and all that. And there's all sorts of people coming in and all sorts of sound effects they put in there. And they're sending it over right to John Kerry's YouTube subscription, possibly. You know, kind of targeting his subscription.
Yeah, and he watches it and goes, oh, my God. Yeah, well, that's what we have. So what's it going to do? What is the market seems to be taking this with a grain of salt?
Not really.
No?
The market was all excited that it was, you know, done with August, one of the worst months in I don't know, a year and a half for equities around the world, actually. And, you know, the market was excited that, first of all, there was light volume. The U.S. market wasn't open on Monday, but futures were. So we saw that there was a big up in Japan and a few other areas because everybody's excited about the manufacturing in China and Europe. Again, there was not much happening. There was no decisions being made. Then when the talking started again today, that took the market down very quickly. The S&Ps were up about 16 or 17 handles. They finished up maybe 7, but that was only because of a late move on the upside. The Dow is down for part of the day today. So there's definitely a lot of pressure over this. Now, the big issue is not so much Syria. The question is going to be, you know, what happens and who are we going to piss off that is going to drive oil up to ridiculous levels? There's all sorts of estimates at the 150 level now.
Let's see, what is it looking like now today, this minute? It is currently
106 or
108.25.
Yeah, well, that's up a bit. Is it moving up? Yeah, that's up from where it was today.
Natural gas is holding steady, so is gold.
Yeah, gold, silver was up like 4% today.
Hmm.
And that's because the idea that it is a precious metal, but also a industry metal, and along with copper moved up as well. So we'll see what happens with this, but there is I find it really to be a no-win on any point, and it's a horrible thing that obviously people are being killed if it is the case, with especially chemical warfare, et cetera. But the problem is that I just don't see it. I see us just really getting in deep on this and pissing off a lot of people.
Yeah, well, it can happen. Hopefully it won't.
Now, I need an explanation from you, the master of technology. So there was an announcement today that Microsoft is buying Nokia's handset division for about $7.5 billion.
Right.
And I started thinking about this, and one of the things that really struck me was the discussion by the gent from Nokia who said that, you know, Nokia's on this deal, Nokia's margins are going to be greatly increased because the losing money division is going to be offloaded, and it's really going to help with the overall, you know, productivity and profitability of the company. And I'm starting to think, let me get this straight. So this is a part of the company that's losing money like crazy. They're all excited. Nokia stock is just skyrocketing, but because Microsoft is buying, the only thing that was kind of interesting here was that the potential for a CEO replacement was over at Nokia. But yet, what the heck does Microsoft get out of this deal?
Well, you know, I've had this basic thesis about Microsoft, which I use to overlay on all my anything I write about the company, which is that Microsoft's goal in life is to become a retailer such as Apple is. In other words, have Microsoft stores everywhere. I think they've got 100 of them so far. And because the margins in these stores are just outrageous. I mean, if they make half the amount of money that Apple makes in its stores, half as much, they're still making more than half the retailers in the world in terms of margins. And they have to round out their line of stuff that they can sell there. And yes, they can sell the Nokia phone if they wanted to, but it would be better if they owned the handset maker and they could sell it without a middleman and sell it as a Microsoft-branded phone to compete with Apple. I think that the only reason that they bought... I thought that they were set up to buy the company Stephen Elop went there in the first place. It looked like a setup to me that they were going to push them into the Windows direction and then buy the company out eventually. I think it was part of the original deal, which is why they didn't offer that much money. But I think this is all part of the long-term Microsoft retail strategy. And then in the process, they get Stephen Elop back to Microsoft, where he gets to be reintroduced to the corporate culture, which hasn't, he claims it changed a lot. I don't think so. And his background is such that he's been a CIOs and COOs. He's been all over the place. And he now has the experience with the channel, the phone channel. And I believe he learned something there, and he brings over both Nokia and he brings over all those patents.
Well, under his guidance, Nokia's stock slipped dramatically.
Yeah, no, he sucked as the CEO of Nokia. If you were an investor in Nokia, you'd rather shoot this guy than anything. But I don't believe that was the strategy to begin with, that he was going to save the company.
The big problem is with the retail stores is that the reason that Apple is so successful is they have their product only, with their OS only, without any other distractions. And Microsoft runs on all these different devices. And to have a Microsoft store with just their devices would be very difficult for them because they have so many people that are using, so many other companies that are dedicated to using Microsoft products, that it would really be a problem for them. It would be part cannibalistic, and secondly, it would be just very irritating.
I don't see it.
Oh.
I know a lot of people will make this assertion, but for one thing, they're not lowballing anybody in their stores. They're selling most of the stuff, you know, at normal prices. So it's just competitive in any – if it was another store with a different brand, it would have been the same thing. They're still competitive. Microsoft owns a monopoly. And they've rarely really taken full advantage of it. I mean, they do take advantage of it. But this is just another example. It's like, okay, Dell, you don't like us running these stores because we're not selling Dell products, although they might under some circumstance. It was co-branded perhaps. But what are you going to do about it? What are you going to go sell computers with Linux on them? You're not going to do that. You can't get a license from Apple. There's no other game in town. So that doesn't, you know, that nobody's going to, yeah, they might be irked by this, but they can't do anything about it.
But if they have a monopoly, you know, what's the point of having a store? Because then it's just an extra overhead.
No, it's the margin. They see what Apple has done. Apple has moved most of its product through its own stores because they can control the sales pitch. That's the key. So you Microsoft says, well, you know, this is not a bad idea. And if something terrible happens, like a miraculous new operating system comes out, let's say the Android on the tablet, and it becomes competitive. I mean, Microsoft has to take some defensive measures here and start selling their own product into their own products. In other words, sell the operating system to themselves. I just think they have to do this. I don't think there's a choice.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch as they're trying desperately to find something that sticks with consumers. But I think it's going to take a while. Well, I don't think the deal even closes till 2014.
Sometime. Yeah, yeah. I don't know when it's going to close late, but it's going to be interesting. I think the buying opportunity is for the Nokia stock, the leftover company. And I say that because, and I don't know when I should put it on our bogus portfolio, but I say that because Nokia has reinvented itself since its inception in the 1800s, I believe. They used to be a boot company, and then they were making tires. And even recently, they were a monitor company, one of the biggest, the first to bring out LCD monitors. And they dropped that, and it went to the phones. And every time they make these switches, the company just, you know, it always starts at a low number, and the stock skyrockets over about a 10-year period. And skyrockets is the right word. It's like maybe you get, 100 to 1,000x.
Well, the market didn't really appreciate this. I mean, Microsoft is down, 5.5%, one of the biggest days that it's seen in a while, ever since the move on the upside of about 8% or 7% when Ballmer announced that he was going to be retiring. So it kind of took back all that gain, by the way.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah, I'm retiring, but I'm still working here, folks. Let me just do a crazy deal right now, and then you can live with it. Yeah,
and then they have an activist investor who only owns a small piece of Microsoft that they signed on to do something, like agree to take some of their advice. And did you see this value?
No, I don't know anything about this.
The Value Act was the name of the, let's see if that was it, Value Act Capital. Yeah, let's try that.
Value Act Holdings?
Yeah, it's called Value Act. Microsoft strikes deal with Value Act Capital, says it will soon be holding regular meetings with San Francisco investment firm Value Act Capital and potentially giving them, got to go to the next page, a seat on the board. Value Act owns less than 1% of the software company's outstanding shares, but is one of its largest shareholders. And under this agreement, President Mason Morfit, really? Anyway, this guy's name is Mason Morfit, will meet with Microsoft directors and management to discuss a range of business issues. The agreement also gives Value Act the option of having Morfit join the Microsoft board after the company's 2013 annual shareholder meeting. It's committed. Obama says that it's committed to enhancing growth for shareholders and looks forward to Value Act's input. I don't know. Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, that's very strange.
Especially because they own such a small...
Mason Morfit's also in the Stanford Rock Center for Corporate Governance.
Very strange.
Yeah, look into this guy.
Very odd. Anyway, moving along here, I thought this was kind of interesting that CNBC viewership, you know, that is the go-to place for, you know, financial TV.
Yeah, it used to be. People don't seem to be watching it so much.
No. As a matter of fact, I mean, what do you have? You have Fox Business, which I can't watch personally.
Fox Business is totally out to lunch. They don't even know what they're doing.
Yeah, I can't watch that. I just can't. It's embarrassing. Then you have Bloomberg TV, which is, you know, it has its ups and downs, but it's a little slow. It's no punch to it.
Kind of boring.
And we got NPR, late night kind of stuff, you know, the rap. But basically throughout the day, what else is there, right? So here's the deal. Nielsen came out with some numbers and said that in July, the prime viewership, the 25 to 54-year-old demographic, tumbled to a fresh 20-year low of just 37,000. Now, I don't know.
Wow.
That seems a little bit weird. Like 37,000 doesn't seem like a lot of people.
It sounds like you could get a bullhorn and drive around San Francisco and get a bigger audience.
No, I didn't understand. Now, they talked about the total viewership, which maybe this makes more sense. Maybe the 25 to 54, they're working during the daytime? Maybe.
Well, a lot of them used to be working in the stock market, and they used to have the thing running in their offices all day.
Right, and you don't need that as much anymore because you have much better news feeds and alternative sources for information that isn't all silver-lined and puffied. You know,
yeah, they do have the reputation for being a puffery operation, but they've been fighting that, but they don't seem to, I don't know, but they're not fighting it very well.
Yeah, the total viewership fared a bit better from Nielsen. It plunged last month, but it dropped to just 128,000, and that was the lowest in about a decade. Now, what's interesting is I saw this, and I don't know how to really figure out if this is real or not, but that Kramer show only has 30,000 on average. Is that saying right? That doesn't seem right.
30,000 total?
Yeah.
It's a possibility because Kramer's show, which I enjoyed for about a month, or two. When it first came out, it was very enjoyable because he was, you know, doing little educational snippets, and he would go crazy about certain stocks. And then over time, it seemed to get stale, and it really hasn't changed. It's the same old thing. He pushes a button, a bull makes a honking noise, and some truck's backing up, and he hits a couple other buttons, and who knows what. And then he's yelling and screaming like he's all doped up. And then there's too many examples of, you know, his, I think when he did the Bear Stearns thing, where he says, no, don't sell Bear Stearns. Remember just before they completely went broke and people lost their asses on this. And then he backed up and remember this? And he says, oh, no, that's not what I was referring to. He says, I wasn't telling people to stay in Bear Stearns. I was telling them that they had, if they were in the bank or something, he had some cockamamie excuse. And I think that killed him.
I'm looking to see what I could find on Cramer's.
But I don't believe that number. That number is really low.
CNBC viewership collapse continues. Cramer audience and Kudlow. When was this dated? 7/8. All right, so this is a couple months ago.
They also lost a lot of their better producers because I had a lot of contacts over there. And and I, every once in a while, if I'm looking something up on LinkedIn or something where I have these people who are all linked to my network, they're not there anymore. Some of the better ones, as a matter of fact. They were hot shots over there, and then they all quit. Either they quit or were rousted. I have no idea.
It says that Mad Money had its lowest ever rated month and quarter ever. This was back in July.
Huh.
Yep. Interesting. Interesting. All right. On to some other things that were interesting. Mr. Trump, Donald Trump. Should be ashamed of himself. It seems that the New York Attorney General is suing Donald Trump's for-profit investment school. You've heard of this Trump University?
Oh, yeah. He should be ashamed of himself. He can't even show up.
Well,
yeah. You know the whole story. This is a very funny story. So he puts together the school, and then one of the promises that everybody got was they get to get a photo of them with Trump. And so Trump never shows up for the photo session. They have a cutout.
Oh, come on.
Yes, check this out. They had a cutout of him standing there, smiling, and you got to take a picture next to the cutout.
Wow. That's pretty rough.
That's really rough. That's what caused the problem.
Well, basically, the claiming in this lawsuit that he operated as an unlicensed educational institution for about 6 years and was essentially an elaborate bait-and-switch operation. So he's in some trouble there.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yep. And there was a comprehensive survey recently done in China. The most comprehensive national survey that was ever done. It shows about 11.6% of the adults, or about 114 million people, have diabetes.
In China?
Yep.
That's odd.
Yep. They said that they said that the finding published yesterday in the Journal of American Medical Association adds 22 million diabetics or the population of Australia to a 2007 estimate and means almost one in three diabetes sufferers globally is in China.
Huh. Well, I don't know. Good news for the drug companies that sell these products for diabetes, but it might also be trigger some research in China that might figure out. Diabetes is a big mystery to the medical profession, like half the diseases out there. They don't even know, you know, what triggers it, if it's poison or who knows. Nobody knows.
Well, one of the big things is that India also has a very high incidence of diabetes, and some of the discussion has been that the change in their diet to more of a westernized culture diet that is a much different, higher in sugar, obviously, but also in wheats and those processed wheats, as well as less vegetables.
Yeah, there could be the wheat thing, because the Chinese are notorious for eating rice, except in one or two areas where they do have a lot of wheat noodles, and it's part of the diet.
And they eat the white rice, and the white rice is not the normal color for the rice. It's bleached out, and all the good stuff is taken out, right?
Well, I guess. I just think it's a filler. I don't think it's really meant to be a nutritional nutritional focus.
Mm. Now, you had some very smart things to say a while ago. You know, when this whole lawsuit came out of the U.S. government against Standard & Poor's. Remember this?
Yeah.
You said, hey, you know, we talked about it. You know, it's interesting that S&P was the only one that really downgraded the sovereign debt rating of the U.S. And, wow, isn't that weird how they're being sued for something that pretty much everybody else did, all the other rating services. So now McGraw-Hill is filing a $5 billion fraud lawsuit. They're filing a response to the $5 billion lawsuit that the federal government has as retaliation for the ratings company's downgrade of U.S. creditworthiness. They said that it was selective, punitive, and meritless litigation. And if the company basically utilized its free speech rights with respect to the creditworthiness of the United States.
Yeah.
So they're kind of going back to them with that and really kind of saying that this is BS. And, you know, the only reason you're doing this is because you're pissed off that we downgraded you.
I think that's true.
Yeah. Well, you called it. It's all coming out. It's all coming out now. I don't know. I mean, probably something they shouldn't have done only because if the potential was there. But on the other hand, you can't not do it if, in fact, the reason that the government is so pissed off is that companies didn't do the right ratings to begin with. You know, it's a kind of a circular calculation.
Yeah, it's terrible. This ratings thing is something of a scam to begin with.
Right. So we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, obviously there was a time when there was a lot of downgrades happening in Europe and the European officials were starting to talk about how they're going to ban the rating services. And
I
also
love that.
Yeah. And they're going to. They did make mention that much of the ratings were not based on facts. It was just opinion.
Yeah, I believe that. I think it's true that much of it is opinion. But
well, of course it's opinion. It's opinion.
But that's
on
what you have to do. I mean, that's the way it works, isn't it? You have some experts. They look at it and say, this smells bad. We better downgrade them.
Yeah, but you never hear of the old, you know, we're upgrading you. Hey, wait a minute. You don't have the facts here.
Yeah,
you may be a little premature in this because we got a couple of problems that are bubbling under the surface that maybe you haven't seen.
Well, this is like the water companies that run California. There's a slight drought, and they jack up the prices. We got to jack up the prices. And then when the drought's over or they have an oversupply of water, they never lower the prices ever.
Never.
So anyway, it's just the same kind of thing. It's like you go, it's always a one-sided deal.
Always. And, you know, who gets screwed in the end, right? You and me. A couple of the things that were really interesting. There was some discussion recently that, you know, this whole, in Japan, this whole premise of how they were going to basically push money into the markets through, you know, a doubling of the monetary base within a year or so and driving the value of the yen down and, you know, moving stocks up and all this. You know, the question is, you're going to issue all this debt and you're going to be having this major debt service. The question is, well, how are you going to pay for it? You know, how is that going to come about? Well, one of the things in the plan that was kind of underneath the surface was that they're going to have an increase in taxes. And about now is when the time that they should be starting to really think about it. And it's been talked about. They've been, you know, trying to ease it into the market and ease it into the discussion so that it's not a shock to the system. But now there is some very serious discussion going on that if we don't have or if they don't have a sales tax increase as soon as next April, so they'll have to start planning on it now and kind of coming up with the numbers and pushing to the market and making it law, that there could be a significant downturn in the market of about 10%, wiping out about $418 billion in market cap. Because, you know, there's going to be not only a downgrade, there's going to be almost a run on the debt. And it's going to be a big problem where you're going to see this massive rise in interest rates and blah, 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 blah. But there's a majority of economists believe this needs to happen or else it's going to be very negative to the financial markets because they essentially won't have the money to pay for the debt. So either way, there's kind of a.
Well, yeah, it sounds to me as though, this is a no-win situation because if you jack up the taxes, it slows the economy.
Exactly.
Which makes it worse, situation worse, worsens it.
They would throw all this money in, right? And they would really, you know, do something dramatic.
Why don't they just crank up the printing presses? I'm telling you.
That's what they did.
Well, I know that's what they did, but why don't they just stay with that until we see some real, until we see an economic issue with the inflation? I mean, right now there is inflation, but it's so minor that I'm not seeing that it's a problem. But I think if they put, and we still, did we find out who's going to be the next head of the Fed?
Well, it looks like Larry Summers is.
Yeah,
is,
but they still haven't announced it, right?
They haven't announced it, but they've been sneaking out, you know, the old trial
feelers.
Yep. And there hasn't been any more discussion because we keep on having other things like, well, Syria and, you know, budget issues. It's all sorts of things that are coming in the way. What they did, it does seem like the last discussion was the most significant out of Jackson Hole and the big conference there, that that Larry Summers is going to be the gent. And they don't have much more time to really do this if he's going to retire at the end of the year, right?
Right.
You know, they have a big party.
And they have to put Summers in for the training. They have to bring him in, and then they have to train him.
Does he get like a certain uniform or something? How's that work?
He says intern on his big thing, his sign he has to wear.
Right. And he's got to follow around some of the Fed guys?
He's got to follow them around and take notes.
God. And all the bad things that happen, he gets blamed for during that time period.
Well, that would be right.
Yeah. Now, have you been following what's going on in Japan in terms of the radioactive waste? Have you?
It's been over-publicized. I've been noticing this. Adam McCurry has a theory on the show about this because we talk about this issue on the No Agenda Show, noagendashow.com, which is that the nuke industry, the people that are trying to build these reactors, are really getting screwed left and right by the bad publicity from this the one in Japan. And I'm noticing a lot of planted articles. There's a bunch of, in fact, there was somebody tweeted something to me today. Look at this. We're all going to die. And so one of the tricks I like to use, and it's very, you have an article and you suspect that it's just it's a public relations thing. And in this case, I think it was to sell some book. And so you find an odd sentence, something that just isn't something you're not going to find. And if you read five articles about one topic, this particular weird sentence is not going to be in five original articles. It's just not going to happen. It's just be too coincidental. Mm-hmm. So you take it about and make it about 10 words, and you cut it and throw it right into Google in a quoted way. So it's quote, the exact same sentence, quote, boom. You get all the places where this sentence, this awkward sentence, showed up. And you'll find, in the case of most of these stories coming out of Japan, that they're planted all over the place.
What's the purpose of this? What's the purpose of the plant? And who's it by?
I believe it's to sell a book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, the end of the world?
It's one of those, one of those gloom and doom books. And they wrote this very elaborate article, and they seeded it. They seeded it all over the place. And nobody changed the word of it. It's exactly the same article, word for word, from beginning to end. And it serves a number of purposes. You don't really know what the real purpose is unless you were one of those guys who posted it, and you can find out who gave it to you to post. But generally speaking, I get very suspicious when I see a lot of this publicity showing up like this. I'm not believing half of it.
Right. Well, some of the things that are going on, I mean, there has been a consistent discussion even from the government. And the government, by the way, has taken over much of the process now because TEPCO can't handle it. Is it the utility company that this all...
Yeah, those guys should have been all shot by now. I don't understand why they're still involved.
But the problem is that they have all this irradiated water and this wastewater that keeps on coming because they had this meltdown that they didn't say there was a meltdown, right? Never happened, but there was this meltdown. And now they're building an ice wall. They're building this device that can build this ice wall around this incredibly hot irradiated water to keep it from escaping. Now, this whole thing that's going to cost about $500 million or so to build this thing is based on a very small model, replica, of what this is. You know, they maybe did it in somebody's freezer or something. I don't know. But they're trying to, you know what they should do? They should just throw down those gigantic tunas down there, those frozen tunas they get. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They could build a big wall that way. But now they're putting it around because there has been a lot of leakage, and there's all these pools of water that have been accumulated. There's no more room. It's something like 25 or 30 Olympic-size pools filled with this water that, you know, the half-life is – I don't even know what it is, some ridiculous level, right, length. And now it seems that they're going to try to build this thing to quarantine this, and, you know, it's going to go down and it's going to be wide, and it's going to, I don't see how it's going to work because all these pipes and everything obviously get leaks because this horrible radiation is probably eating through it, and it's going to the waters there. I mean, I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to find out the truth, whichever side it is.
No, we're not. The whole thing is ridiculous. It's just a mess.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening there.
Pacific Ocean's big, though, so I'm not too concerned.
There's some good news about for coffee drinkers out there.
Green Mountain.
No. It is Green Mountain?
No.
Civet Coffee. You familiar with it?
Yeah, that's where Civet Coffee became a popular thing, I get, about 8 years ago? And supposedly it's from the civet cat that likes to eat coffee beans and I guess doesn't chew them and swallows them. And then the coffee bean goes through the gut of the cat and then they crap out their cat shit, craps out with the beans still intact. But they've been processed by the cat's intestines and stomach. And somehow magically it's changed the constituency, the balance of the acids and the flavor ingredients and all the rest of it. So you wash the beans, you wash them, brush them, you brush the crap off the beans, and then you make coffee. It's supposed to be delicious.
What kind of person would do that kind of thing? What kind of person would drink that kind of coffee?
I wouldn't. Jamaican Blue Mountain, to me, is the world's greatest coffee. I can drink that if I'm going to spend this kind of – this is more expensive than Jamaican Blue Mountain. I don't know why anyone would try it.
Well, I know a guy.
Oh.
I know a guy.
And do we really believe this is actually a true product and not some bull crap?
Not bull crap, civet crap. But listen, I was actually on a civet farm in Bali.
A civet farm.
I'm not kidding about this either. It's in the middle of a jungle.
This was when?
Last summer.
Okay. That's right.
And I went to a civet farm, and there's all these little civet buggers, you know, around doing their thing, and they're eating something. There's some in a cage, actually, they had, you know. And they're, sure enough, eating the coffee beans. You know, these coffee beans that are right off there, and they take them off, and
They're not roasted at the time, right?
Not at the time, no.
And so they're green coffee beans. They eat them, and then I guess after they crap them out, they roast them after the fact?
Yes, yes. Okay. I actually met the person.
Did you try?
What they did to get this job, but they're the person that collects the beans.
Yeah.
That's their job. And then they take it and they wash it, like you said, and they put it, they hand roast it. And I saw them do this. They take a big bunch of wood and they put it in this pan, and then they take a big old hollowed out bamboo pipe kind of thing, and they blow it, and they get the fire really going, and they roast it, and they roast it, and they roast it, and they sit there, and they squat. They can squat for a long time over there. They squat, and they're doing this stuff. And I said, here, you know what I want to do? I'll tell you something. I can't believe this really tastes good. I've always wanted to try this. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to give me a cup of coffee, the regular stuff, same way you roast it and all that, and I want you to put a cup of civet coffee right next to it. I wanted to see if I could taste the difference. I thought that was reasonable, right?
Yeah.
There is a big difference.
Now, the regular coffee's better.
It's bitter. Comparatively, it's bitter.
What, the civet or the regular?
No, the regular. The civet is definitely a different. Now, I'm just telling you, the taste was much different. I'm not saying it was so compelling that I would pay the extraordinary amount that they want for the stuff. But it was definitely a different flavor and or different consistency, and it was much smoother. And if the beans were exactly the same, except for the path they took to get to me, so to speak, okay, then that's what it is. Now I understand they're also doing this with elephants now.
Elephant coffee?
Yep. Now, the only problem with the elephant coffee, and there's a big outcry about this, is that it's not part of their natural diet. So now you got two people that get really screwed. You got one guy that's feeding the elephant this stuff, and the other guy that really's got a problem by cleaning it up.
Oh, God.
That's a tough job. And they do the same thing. And that's just as expensive or more expensive than the civet coffee. Personally, I find I could do just as good of a job.
I think people should just eat green coffee beans, swallow them like pills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's the deal?
And then you have, you know, Andrew's blend.
Yeah, exactly. It's much easier, you know?
Yeah, it's disgusting. Exactly.
So, you know, yeah. But there is a difference anyway. So I put an article up there you take a look at. Now, the big news is that there is a way now to find if the civet coffee is real, because I guess there's an incredible underground movement that is putting out fraudulent and non-civet coffee.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. It's a big dilemma, it seems. And there is now a way, a special process to find out. So I guess you got to go and maybe it's kind of like, I guess, you know, when you have a pool, you bring your little.
Yeah, you need a test.
Yeah, you bring
it's a chemical test because there's apparently something in the civet roasted coffee that is different.
Feces.
Yeah, probably some crap. Yeah, some cat shit.
Right. So you go and you bring this to, or you get this maybe at home kit, and maybe it's like a pregnancy kit. It comes with a plus or a minus, maybe, I don't know. And you can find out if your civet coffee is real. Now, I guess I don't know what the market is for that, but. It is available if anybody is concerned about their civet coffee. There is now a test to make sure that you're getting the real deal. I thought that was important to bring up.
Yeah, apparently.
Better than the circumcision discussion, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right.
And finally on my list is the global ETFs. These are the exchange traded funds that are actively traded on the markets that look to emulate the various stock markets around the world. Well, there's an interesting chart that I picked up tonight that shows that the trend of flows on a monthly basis, we call this seasonality, and you can see how much money is put into the various
what does ETP mean?
Yeah, same thing. ETF, ETP, same thing.
Hmm.
And it shows the flows that
exchange traded product. Okay, mm-hmm. I get it.
And these are the global exchange traded products. Like BlackRock, this is the source of BlackRock, who obviously is a
looks
big
like it's
player.
All going up.
Yeah, but it's interesting the big downturn it took. Although it's been a bit choppy this year compared to other years, but the big downturn compared to the other years, a big amount was drawn out last month. One of the biggest months of net outflows in a long time.
Yeah, the red line.
That's probably some of the reason why the markets were a little bit choppy and actually down last month. So
that makes sense.
See what happens. All right, let's take a look. I actually went back and I did some work on the stock list because we did have some things stop out finally and we could take them off the list.
Yeah, the list is too long.
Yeah, but we got about 6 stocks coming off. Well, I think 6 stocks coming off. Yeah, 6 stocks coming off. So this is a list that we put together that we come up with some ideas for things that we may buy or short. It's kind of a game, and that's where we get the offshoot of the game that we're playing with you, which, of course, you can go over to DH Unplugged and put in your price guess for Apple at any time that you hear this. It's going to be open to go for another week. And this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. And John, myself, or Horowitz & Company clients may own any of these. That will be noted. And, of course, seek proper financial guidance if you're going to do anything when it comes to investing because there's all sorts of risk. So here's the deal. Corning is coming off the list. You have an 18.5% gain on it. Amazon is off the list. Stopped out 2.8%. McGraw-Hill, the thing we just talked about with the S&P 500, is up 29%, staying on. Corn just keeps on getting uglier. Although soybeans has been rocking lately. I mean, really rocking. But corn is up 20% since we shorted it way back in January. We still have most of it on here. Las Vegas Sands stopped out with a 6% loss. Clean Energy stopped out with a pretty much even. Outerwall stopped out. It was a short with a 1.6% loss. Weyerhaeuser stopped out with a 2% loss. That was a buy. Let's see what else we have here. Philip Morris. That's been doing nicely, very quickly. I didn't think it would kind of climb that quickly on the short. Up 6.5%. Questcor up 104%. Invivio up 31%. Acadia up 48%. You know, if you look at this, he's talking about the pharmaceuticals are doing really well here.
Yeah, it looks like that's what we're all, except Live Nation.
Yeah, that's just terrific. Freeport Mac brand doing really great. Up 3% today. Up 10.5% since we picked it up. You picked it up. Potash. Just kind of staying where it is. JCPenney, you're going to get a nice pop probably on JCPenney tomorrow. The thesis on JCPenney was that some of the overhead was removed after Ackman came out. There was a fund that picked up, I think they went from a 1 or 2% position to about a 9% position. And that announcement came out after the close of business today, and it was up about 2% after that. So it was a 2% move up today for JCPenney, and probably see a 1 or 2 at least tomorrow if that does follow through. So that's good news. Any stocks on your list here?
I'm reluctant to put any on here for a number of reasons. One, I think there's going to – I mean, the potential for a market turnaround is pretty, down. is high, and I don't have any shorts that I could trust. And I don't want to go long necessarily. I look at some insider buying. It's nothing really that makes me comfortable.
Now, you mentioned insider buying. Remember that one stock that we've looked at before, which is the that Opca Health? Remember that whole thing where the guy was buying?
Yeah.
You got to look at that stock. OPK is the symbol, okay? Now, it's a pharmaceutical, by the way. But we've been talking that for a while. And this guy, I mean, clearly we've been talking about it all year this year, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about it probably sometime last year. Stock was in the fours, in the threes. It's now at about, it actually spiked up to about 10 the other day. Now it's about 9 and change.
9.19.
A pretty impressive move here. Now, this guy is still buying like a crazy man. If you look at the, on FinViz, for example, you can see that. You can look at the insiders. And this guy, Phil Frost, has actually stopped buying in July sometime.
What do you think they got going here?
Here's the deal. This Phil Frost, who is the CEO and chairman of Opco, who is actually, he lives down here in Florida in Hollywood. And you look at the insider buying. I'm just looking at a section of this from May through July. And there's just buys almost every few days. You have 384,000 May 20th from this one guy, 514,000 May 21st, 290,000 May 22nd, 257 May 23rd, 675,000 May 24th. I mean, you know, that's some serious bread, right? I mean, you know, it's just it's crazy. He bought 1.5 million.
And the punchline is,
he is
anyway, go on.
What? No, well, he is also the on the board of Teva. Teva owns a piece of this company.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this before. Yeah. We're thinking that it's a buyout candidate.
Yeah, and we think that, you know, the possibility for this guy to, you know, be, you know, looking at, let's see here. Let's see what should be. I'm trying to find where this is here on this Teva. Major holders. Let's see what we have, if that's the one. Wellington Management, Capital Invesco, top holders. Where is my... Is the profile here? Here. Let's look at the profile. Okay. On Teva. He's somewhere on here. Key executives. He's somewhere. He's on the board. Jim Levin, Daishe, Hayden, Mannix. Let's look it up a different way. Phil Frost. Phil Frost. Oh, my God, I can't spell. I'm calling him Pill. Phil Frost.
That's funny.
Phil Frost, Teva. Yeah, he's on the board of directors. He's the chairman of the board of Teva. So he's chairman of the board of Teva. He's also the CEO and chairman of this other deal. And he's recommended for a while that they're seeking small deals and partnerships.
Yeah, they're buying companies left and right, all small.
Right. So, you know, what happens when, you know, this guy, you know, would you know, maybe look to buy this other company? And what a great little deal to be buying it
on
yourself.
On both sides of the deal.
Here it is right here. He says, Frost has used these approaches to build companies since he parlayed $50,000 investment into a struggling Key Pharmaceuticals in 1972 into an $825 million sale to Shearing Plough 14 years later. Today, he and associates are assembling Opco Health, a Miami-based holding company for diagnostic equipment and medical products. He's the chairman and CEO and owns 46% of the company with 136 million shares that were valued at about $973 million in March. Stock has surged 49% this year to 7, and that's even higher. He predicts that their tests, such as the 4K score that identifies aggressive prostate cancer, will gain. And let's see. Forrest has amassed $3 billion with investments from healthcare to gold mine to cigarette vendors, Vector Group, University of Miami School of Music. They live in a $53 million mansion on nearby Star Island where they collect rare palms and count rapper Sean Diddy Combs among their neighbors.
They collect what?
Rare palms.
What do you mean rare palms?
That's what it says.
Okay.
What's a rare palm? It's a
tree, I guess, unless they're chopping people's hands off. I don't think that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there you go. Nice way to make some money.
But, yeah, this guy starts with 50 grand, and now he's up to, what, $3 billion?
Yep, nice, huh?
He must be a wheeler dealer. That's what I would say.
Seems that way. He's got some connections and some people that he can. Listen, money comes to money, right?
Yeah, Florida.
He graduated the Albert Einstein College of Medicine at the Yeshiva University in the Bronx in 61. First taught dermatology at the University of Miami. In 72, he founded a dermatology department at Miami's Mount Sinai Hospital and started doing deals on the side. Let's see here. He sold Cost Pharmaceuticals to Abbott for $3.7 billion. He had a partner who was 84 years old. A genetics company identifies, he pounced again. He, together with Israel Makov, then CEO of Teva, a main IVAX rival, they discussed buying IVAX on a French yacht off Capri, Italy in the summer of 2004. I've done that often, by the way.
Oh, I can just see you there.
Yeah. I do a lot of work on the yacht. They met again the next year, punctuating their boat trip with walks in the Mediterranean island of Ibiza, Spain. I've done that too. This guy and I have a very parallel life, it seems. Sealing deal at New York's Sherry Netherland Hotel. Some Israelis remain skeptical. Let's see here. He made Frost got a 74% compensation. Wow, 74% increase in his compensation, and an additional $700,000 for private airline expenses. Well, I'm a little bit lower than that, so.
Yeah, he's got you beat there.
Yeah, that one's a little tough. Let's see here. The almost octogenarian. Yeah, the old guy isn't winding down at all. They're vested to placate Teva Demand, Opco, and perhaps new companies to build. Asked why he hasn't adopted golfing or other hobbies as the super wealthy, his face gives away to a faint smile. This is what keeps me going, he says.
I'll bet it does.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm not in on that one.
Interesting story, though.
Too suspect.
Yeah, interesting story here.
It would have been nice to have been on the $3 deal, but no.
Actually, I have a client who bought it.
No, good for him.
Yeah, I made 300 and something percent on it. And what's interesting about that was that they were told to buy the stock by him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's down here. Yeah, I got the stock. Great stock.
Buy the stock. Well, he probably says it to everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. So we'll see what happens with this. Anyway, that's all we got.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens next week. We'll be able to see who won the first week of the IBM contest, and then we'll go to Apple and whatever.
Yep. Go over to DH Unplugged and make sure that you put in your information there and your little guess, and you have the chance to win some very big prizes. And, of course, follow John at The Real Dvorak. That's his Twitter handle. I am Andrew Horowitz at Twitter, of course, or at Twitter at Andrew Horowitz, whatever it is. And, of course, we have those webinars coming up, so you can sign up. We have we're about half full or so, and we just announced it. So make sure to go over to Trigger Charts, and you can get on it that way, or go over to any, just look up my name and you'll find it. And of course, John's book is doing really well. You got to get a copy of that. There's a way to get it right on the front page of DH Unplugged as well. So you can make sure to get that fabulous book. And it's called, of course,
Inside Track 2013.
Inside Track 2013. Something that you need to pick up and read, because John is he's the Phil Frost of writing.
Phil Frost. Okay, well, then next Tuesday, we'll be back, hopefully.
Yep. And Happy New Year to all of our Jewish friends.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay, I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.